step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on Softy and Dick on a beautiful Wednesday night, brought to you, of course, by our friends at VenueKings.com.
More than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution.
Ian Rappaport reporting the Seahawks are giving Gerald Everett, tight end from the Rams, a one-year, $6 million deal. Last year in L.A. with the Rams, Everett, 41 catches.
41 yards.
400 yards, a touchdown, splitting time with Tyler Higbee, coming to Seattle to, I assume, be tight end number one in Shane Waldron's new offense with the Seahawks. Gerald Everett now a Hawk.
Justin Coleman signed a one-year deal worth up to $2.75 million with the Dolphins, and the 49ers signing tackle Trent Williams, the largest offensive lineman contract in history, 6 years, $138 million. They've also signed former Falcons center Alex Mack to a deal.
Can you feel it now?
UW, who has won the last seven Apple Cups, and that had nothing to do with the fact that Michael Sean Dugar is on hold right now, adding Oklahoma transfer corner Brendan Radley-Hiles to their secondary, number seven corner in the 2018 class, spent the last 3 years with the Sooners, starting 32 games.
Daniel Berger's pulled out of this week's Honda Classic with a rib injury. He was the tournament favorite at 10-1.
Let's see, one more. Rodney Hudson, now a former Raider. Instead of releasing him, the Raiders have traded Rodney Hudson plus a seventh-round draft pick to the Cardinals for a third-round pick.
All right, the 5 o'clock hour sponsored by West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now. Here's the number, 206-312-7008, 206-312-7008. Check out westcoastmenshealth.com.
All right, boys and girls, 504 here on the radio show. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome in two guys that cover the Seahawks better than anybody. And I actually mean that. I think Joe Fan of NBC and Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic are the best at what they do in the city, and they're joining us right now on the radio show. Both guests have their choice of compensation for this next hour, Dick. They can A, receive the admiration and praise from us, or B, $50 in Taco Time gift cards. So we'll have our people call their people off the air and figure out the compensation. But Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic.
They try to make it basketball on grass.
He's with us on the radio program. Big Mike, how are you, pal?
I am doing good. You know, I'm really happy about my Washington State women's basketball team playing in the NCAA tournament on Sunday.
You know,
I'm really happy about that, Softy. Can't throw that out there.
I know you are. Very much so. Congratulations. Joe Fan, NBC Sports, is with us on the show. Joseph, what's happening, baby? How are you?
Hey, fellas. I'm just here. I'm just eating my popcorn. I'm ready for Softy and Dugard to duke it out here this next hour. I'm taking a step aside and letting you two go out of here.
Well, I just know this, that Michael Sean Dugar can come at me with the women's basketball team making the tournament. I'll just come at him with seven straight Apple Cups, and I think that conversation pretty much comes to an end. But I'm willing to, you know, hear it out, so we'll see what happens in the next hour. But, guys, let's start with you, and Mike will get your thoughts first on just kind of where the Seahawks are at right now as a franchise, the perception, the atmosphere around the team. You know, Dick and I were talking about this on the air, off the air. Is there more pessimism or optimism about the franchise heading into 2021? The Russell Wilson thing for now seems to be dead, but what do you make of the state of the franchise so far from your perspective, Mike?
Yeah, I saw that poll that you had, and I actually picked the pessimistic side of things just because that's kind of how I am, sadly, being a sports writer. But I think really it's because of the egos involved. You know, I don't think that either side, if we had to divide it between Russell and the front office, whether that be Pete, John, Matt Thomas, or whoever, like, everyone has an ego. And to fix this, they need to start listening to each other and working together. And irregardless of what I think about individual free agent signings or Russell's kind of media run where he talked about being pissed, I don't get the sense that the two sides are willing to work together to fix the issue. You know, and that's really huge right now. You know, beyond signings or offensive philosophy, like if I don't think Party A is willing to work with Party B, you know, to let bygones be bygones, then how can I possibly be optimistic about the direction of the franchise?
Joe, your thoughts on that?
I agree with Mike. And just to add on top of that, you look at the moves that are being made around the division and then where the Seahawks are at. I just think you can't feel any sort of optimism until you know who's going to be starting at center, who's going to be starting at left guard, who's the pass rush going to be, you know, featured. I mean, right now they have so many prominent holes on the roster to where, and you're looking at, okay, how are they going to get that done? Their cap space is dwindling with the Puna Ford deals and the Gerald Everett deals. And then you have four draft picks in the upcoming draft. So, and you're already down right now, Chris Carson, Carlos Dunlap, Shaquille Griffin, KJ Wright. You have so many notable departures. I'm just curious how you feel like, or how you get to a point where you step on the field in week one and you're a better team, at least on paper, than you were in 2020. They just got an uphill battle they're going to continue to have to climb. And at some point, they're going to have to get lucky on a pass rusher or two in order to feel any sort of optimism around this team, in my opinion.
Well, I would ask you guys this. How is this any different, other than the Russell Wilson situation? I'm just talking about the free agent situation. How is it any different than any other day one of free agency? I mean, the Hawks are never involved early in free agency. They always have a ton of holes in mid-March. Everybody always panics in mid-March. And then by the game one, we're like, you know, this team is probably as good, at least, if not a little bit better than it was last year. So, Mike, talk about that, and especially since there's so much money they can free up, as you have put in your pieces numerous times.
You know, I think the difference is the urgency that Russell's operating with. You know, he's always wanted to win a championship literally every season, but you can tell he's very frustrated. He's getting closer to being a lot more fed up about watching Super Bowls than he was maybe after the 2018 or 2019 seasons. You know, he's almost like having a mid-quarterback crisis. You know, he feels the clock ticking. This is year 10 for him, and he wants to play 50 million years. But, like, year 10 is a lot, right? You play a lot. You had a lot of wear and tear on your body. So I think because the pressure's on to basically make it back to the Super Bowl, it's not just, oh, the Seahawks haven't spent a lot, but they'll still have a good team. Yeah. Russell Wilson has made it very clear being good isn't good enough. I know that's the case in previous years as well, but, you know, he hasn't come out and said it the way he has this year. So that's where it's a little different in terms of the urgency this year.
Joe, how much of what Mike's talking about there, where they're just good, they're not great, how much of that, in at least in recent times, has fallen on number three shoulders?
A good portion of it. You know, he wasn't himself the last eight games of the season, and even in that playoff loss, he shoulders some of the burden and plenty of the blame. But you look at the rosters that are making it to NFC and AFC championship games and the Bucs winning the Super Bowl and the amount of blue-chip talent on both sides of the football, especially in the Bucs' case, dwarfs Seattle's. And I think to me, Dick, to Adam, to your point, is you talk about the urgency, but also the lack of capital in order to make those changes and make those adjustments. And when you continue to get tier two and tier three free agents, and you're banking on best case scenarios out of all of them, that puts you in a tough spot. And I think that loss, that ugly loss, that inexcusable loss, getting blown out at home, embarrassed at home, being a 12-4 division winner by a division rival, I think, again, adds to the sense of urgency and pressure that the fan base is going to put on the organization, to where they've been in this good, not great, kind of stagnant situation since 2014, really. And, you know, so I think that's the issue, is where you're at, is what are the avenues that they can pursue to where this team is even just a little bit better than it was last year, to where you feel like this team is in the prime of its championship window.
Yeah. All right, guys, we appreciate you doing this. We have a lot to get to. The report on the Bears' offer for Russell, the Gerald Everett signing, Shaquille Griffin taken off, Gerald Everett now, Witherspoon, all that stuff. You can follow Joe on Twitter, @Joe_fan. That's with two N's, by the way. And follow Mike on Twitter, @MikeDugar. And for every follow that Mike gets between now and 6 p.m., I will donate 25 cents to the Cougar Scholarship. scholarship fund. So jump on that and let's make some money for the kids. Mike Dugar from The Athletic, Joe Fan from NBC. Lots of Seahawk chatter with both these gents coming up on Softie and
Dick. In one app. Now back to Softie and Dick on your home for March Madness and the Final Four. Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
Was he in or was he out? It's brought to you by In-N-Out Burger. That's what a hamburger is all about.
All right, 521, Softie, Dick Jackson, joined by Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic, Joe Fan from NBC Sports. Follow Joe on Twitter, at Joe_Fan with two N's, at Mike Dugar on Twitter as well. They're both back with us on the air. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us until 6 p.m. tonight. And I want to go back to the reported trade the Bears offered to the Seahawks guys for Russell Wilson. They're down there in Fargo taking a look at a hotshot quarterback, and Ryan Pace and John Schneider happened to go find a little cozy corner and talk about a deal. And the Bears, apparently, according to Dan Patrick, offered 3 first-round draft picks, a third, and 2 starting players. Jason Lockenfora, by the way, reported today he heard that Seattle was offered a swath of players to choose from, including Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks, the defensive tackle for the Bears. Mike, let's start with you and get your thoughts on that proposed trade by the Bears and how long you think John Schneider and Pete Carroll actually thought about taking that bad boy.
Well, I told anyone in New Orleans and anyone in Chicago, like, hey, if you guys want Russell Wilson, I'm going to speak on behalf of the city of Seattle and say we need your NBA team in return.
There you go.
All right, so if you're in New Orleans, you got to send us the Pelicans.
Yep.
And yeah, if you're in Chicago, we need.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Bulls, we want Zach LaVine. We want all that, right? If you're going to come up off Russell. I think that's how big the deal has to be. Now, you got to remember this thing about first-round picks, too. You can trade a million of first-round picks, but if you're giving up Russell Wilson, you're assuming that the team won't suck, right? So you're looking at whatever the Bears have now, I think pick 20.
Yep.
You're looking at pick 20 and beyond probably for the next few years. Those picks don't mean anything. Those are picks Seattle would trade back for anyway or trade back out of. So there was really no great value in there. And also there's no quarterback. I don't care if you get Khalil Mack, Jalen Johnson, whoever else they have. Allen Robinson, don't care. If you're not getting a quarterback this time next year, yep. John Schneider, Pete Carroll, they're in the unemployment line after going like 3-14 because they have all these assets and Geno Smith at quarterback.
Joe, I asked Dick on the air, if the Seahawks accepted that deal, which I think all of us agree with Mike, there's no way they were doing that. But let's say, you know, John Schneider fell down, hit his head, and woke up as a moron, and he takes that deal from the Bears. Russell Wilson has to approve any trade. Does Russell Wilson approve that trade? If John Schneider says yes, does he actually say yes, I want out of here?
That's the million-dollar question, and it would be really curious to know what he would have done. And I don't want to speak for Russ. My gut says he would.
Wow.
I don't think you put out the list of 4 teams publicly with his agent's name on it to Adam Schefter without fully preparing or without being fully prepared to potentially play for someone else. And to me, that's the perfect way for Russell Wilson to sort of keep his legacy in Seattle intact and his image intact to where he never officially requested a trade. He never officially asked to be out the way Deshaun Watson has. It was just like, hey, if you're going to explore it, these are the 4 teams you should explore it with. So he would get his desired new destination, his desired seat at the table, his desired power over the philosophy of the offense without having to be the bad guy and go nuclear in Seattle.
Guys, I have rarely felt a vibe of a story so different as far as how the national media is reporting it versus how a local media is reporting it. And Mike, we'll start with you. Why do you think the national media went so nuts over the possibility of this happening when, you know, the local media kind of understood what the ramifications of trading Russell Wilson would be?
I mean, it is fun to talk about when you don't have to stick around for the consequences, right? If I live in Bristol or L.A. and I can just opine about the idea of Russell Wilson moving around and I don't have to, you know, live in Renton or Seattle and be the one to cover a team led by Andy Dalton or a Geno Smith or whatever, yeah, then it is fun. But I think, you know, for someone like me who was part of the team that kind of broke the story and made it all, like, a big deal, we knew how serious it was. But if you even read our reporting, we don't really suggest that a trade this year right. is going to happen. Like, I was right. telling people the whole time, like, yeah, he'll probably be the guy in 2021 because Pete Carroll's not an idiot. Now, in 2022, I can't speak for, you know, who will be the quarterback or who will be the head coach, you know, if they fall short. But I can easily see why if you're sitting in a comfy studio in L.A., New York, or Bristol or whatever in Connecticut, you're like, yeah, let's just move Russell to, you know, Liverpool if we want, right? Because it'll be fun.
Well, but isn't Joe the story that he may not be here past this year? Isn't that enough to have massive amounts of conversation? You know, going back to week 7 when they beat the Niners and put up 37 and Russell threw 4 touchdowns, I think everybody back then thought he'll be 33 in November. He'll re-sign in a couple years and he'll stay here until he's 38, 39. Maybe he'll play somewhere else in his 40s, but he's not going anywhere for a long, long time. And now we can't say that he will be here for a long, long time. Isn't that enough to have this conversation?
I think so, and I've been having it, and Mike has as well, and you guys have as well. And what that's maybe the craziest part of this to me is the amount of people who want to pretend this is a media creation, this whole storyline, and that everyone's just trying to clickbait right now and create something, much ado about nothing, everything's A-OK, this is a non-story, yada, yada, yada. I don't get that part of it, because like you said, even the thought of Russell Wilson coming out and asking a trade, the fact that is more of a reality now than it has ever been, and he went on this very intentional media tour after having to watch Tom Brady win his 7th Super Bowl, none of this is by accident. And it just, I don't understand why people choose to not be more curious about the situation. And yes, if you just read the words, I want more protection, I want better protection, I get hit too much, that's not that crazy, but you have to read between the lines and understand who you're dealing with. This is the most image-centric, image-conscious athlete I've ever covered, certainly, and I don't know who we'd even bring up to the table to potentially say that someone is more image-centric and image-conscious than Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
So the fact that he is going on this media tour and now, in my opinion, and the way I put it, was putting the team on notice, says a lot about the frustration that has been boiling for years and years. And Mike's reporting was tremendous, along with Jason Jenks and Mike Sando, really bringing details to the fracture that we all knew existed at that point. And to me, yeah, that is more than enough. Whether or not he gets traded this year or next year, this is a relevant conversation and it's worth having.
Michael Sean Dugar with us, Joe Fan, Dick Fain, Dave Softy Mahler. Mike, Robert Turbin was on with us a couple weeks ago, or last week I think it was, and he said someone needs to come out and squash this and say something publicly, and Turbo said he thinks Russell should be the guy to do it. We've heard nothing from him. Do you agree with Turbo that Russell needs to end all this yakking?
No, I don't think so. For me, I didn't need either party to come out and say anything. I just needed Seattle to act accordingly in that they, like, with their free agent moves or their trades or whatever. Like, if you trade for an offensive lineman, if you signed, you know, Tooney, or you signed Lindsley or whatever went after the dude, Zeitler or whatever, like, those moves would say, we hear you, Russ. You know, because those would be moves that they wouldn't make in previous years. You could tell it would be a reaction to their quarterback going out here and lighting the world on fire. Actions speak louder than words, so I'm cool with actions. A little press conference to be like, we love each other, kumbaya. No, you don't. Right? Even if they come out and say they hate each other, what does that do? Right? The only thing that could really fix the situation is fixing it behind closed doors and then publicly coming out and making the roster better. They don't owe us any explanation. What Russ doesn't, Pete doesn't, John doesn't, no one does. Yeah. They just owe it for the team to make it back to the Super Bowl, yeah. Right? That's all that really matters.
We have breaking news, guys, to report here. Great timing to have both you on. Adam Schefter is reporting that the Raiders are trading Gabe Jackson to the Seahawks for a 2021 draft pick. That would presumably solve one of their guard issues on this football team. Gerald Everett first, Witherspoon yesterday, and now Gabe Jackson today. Joe, start with you. How big of a pickup is Gabe Jackson, and how far does this go to satisfy Russell Wilson's frustrations in your mind?
Yeah, to me, to what Mike was just saying, it shows the urgency. It shows that they are proactively trying to make this offensive line better, I think, in terms of what was still out there potentially for the taking. Gabe Jackson was their best bet. He's a guy who's going to be 30 in July, but depending on what kind of contract they give him, this is a smart move. And I think what it's going to end up being is it's going to be a short-term commitment to appease Russ in the short term. But should Russ decide he still wants out, you're not tied to him with big money long term. And that's kind of the rub of this is, do you pay a record-breaking center or guard deal when Russell Wilson isn't guaranteed to stay past 2021 or 2022, even if you do your best to put the offensive line in front of him that he wants? So I think it's a fantastic move. Now it means they only have three draft picks. But at the end of the day, I mean, you've got to fill voids when you have opportunities to, and Gabe Jackson, a very quality player that is going to settle in. It's going to be interesting to see if he plays right guard and they potentially move Damian Lewis to left guard. But regardless, that is one big box checked off their to-do list.
Guys, what about the other two acquisitions? Now you have, all of a sudden, John Schneider getting a little busy after Seahawks Twitter chirps and chirps and chirps about them, not them doing anything. Gerald Everett, Akella Witherspoon. Mike, let's start with you on those two acquisitions.
I'm not big on the money on the Gerald Everett one. I don't think after giving Greg Olsen $7 million for 1 year and then that not really working out, turning around and giving Gerald a $7 million deal. I know it's six guaranteed. But even then, I just kind of think that's a little bit much for how much you can realistically expect to use tight ends in any offense. Like, I know that tight ends weren't utilized as much people would have liked in 2020, but I mean, they had 2,000-yard wide receivers, right? That's why. Once you have 2,000-yard wide receivers, you're not really going to get another like 1,000-yard tight end. You probably won't even get like an 800-yard tight end out of that. So I didn't like the money side of that one. The Witherspoon one is kind of just whatever. I think he's got some high upside, and I still think they should bring back like Quentin Dunbar or someone else. You know, I actually talked to someone who's pretty familiar with Seattle's defense, like really, really, really familiar. I asked them how big of a loss it was, having Shaquille go to Jacksonville. They said if they don't get Quentin Dunbar back, they're in trouble, right? So that's how, strong they felt about like Shaquille, being gone and only bringing in Witherspoon. I'm not, like, super big fans of either of those moves, really. I like the Puna extension, saves them a little cash. But so far, easily the best move is picking up an offensive line.
But, Joe, doesn't this move with Gerald Everett and Gabe Jackson kind of remind us that Pete Carroll's serious about getting back to his roots? And Mike's point about DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, both being 1,000-yard guys, I mean, that's partly because Russell Wilson in the first eight games of the year threw the ball 256 times. I don't think Pete Carroll wants him throwing the ball 256 times in any eight game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Stretch. Isn't this another reminder and how we pulled the plug on the Let Russ Cook movement after one bad game a year ago that Pete Carroll is serious about getting back to what won him a championship?
You're not paying a tight end $6 million to block. I mean, that's not to say he won't be an adequate blocker, but I mean, this is an athlete that they will hope can provide some yards after the catch ability, something really no one on the Seahawks offered last year, a bit of a seam stretcher. You have to get more out of him than they get out of Greg Olsen. I mean, 24 catches, 239 yards, and one touchdown ain't going to cut it for $6 million. But you have to believe Shane Waldron signed off on this and believes there is a ceiling that is yet unreached by Gerald Everett. And so when you have that familiarity and you have your offensive coordinator who's been around him for years now and was a part of bringing him to Los Angeles in the draft, again, a second-round pick out of South Alabama, you say, hey, this is a guy, if we feature him a bit more, he's capable of big things and is worth the money. So I think Waldron's sign-off is key there. And if I'm a Seahawks fan, it gives me a little bit more optimism in terms of the signing. But, yeah, the money is big, and there's going to be pressure on him to put up numbers beyond just paving the way for whoever's running the football.
Mike, you were talking about your concerns at the cornerback spot, and I think they're one away. I think you're right. I think they're one signing away, and whether that's Dunbar or whether that's somebody else that we know a lot better than Dunbar, I know you probably saw the back and forth today on Twitter between Will Blackman and Richard Sherman telling 25 to come back to Seattle. Is the Richard Sherman bridge burned here, or is that a legitimate possibility and a good option for Seattle?
No, I don't think it's burned, really. What I've learned kind of reporting on some of the Seahawks who have left, whether or just learning about them after they're gone, whether that's Cliff or Mike B or Earl or Cam or Sherm, I mean, even like a Quentin Jefferson or Justin Coleman or whatever, like they're usually like pretty good terms. I mean, for example, you would think Michael Bennett, right? Burned bridge, was reading in the meetings, whatever. They got him up out of here for a fifth-round pick. Well, I mean, Michael Bennett spoke to the team this summer on Zoom, you know, like when everyone was talking about like racism or police brutality, right? Him and Pete and John or whoever, like they're good. You know, I'm under the impression like Sherman and Pete are like fine. They're not like buddies or whatever, but they're not like going to throw hands if they run into each other at, like Benihana. So I think like they're okay too. The thing is that why everyone's clamoring with Sherm coming back is Seattle A has a really bad track record bringing in cornerbacks from other systems. And B, they really need a defense to be solid and get turnovers, right? That's why I'm not really big on how they've used their money so far, outside of whatever they gave up to get Gabe Jackson. I think it's a fifth rounder.
Yep.
If you're going to play Pete ball, your defense has to be really, really, really good. It can't just be average. It can be average when you're letting Russ cook. If you're going to run the ball, you have to have an elite defense. And I just don't think like the combination of a Witherspoon, DJ Reed, Trey Flott, I just don't think that's going to get it done. Like Sherman, I think even at his age, gives you the potential to have like at least something resembling a shutdown guy over there. Just raises the ceiling on what your defense can be.
Well, now I'm craving a little hibachi steak ever since you dropped the Benihana reference on me. So thanks for that. Appreciate that. But Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic, Joe Fan from NBC. And Joe, you were in San Francisco when Richard was down there, and you obviously know his history from Seattle. Do you think if the Seahawks had interest that Richard would reciprocate and be even remotely interested in coming back?
I think he could, but this is a guy who still believes he's one of the best corners in football, and he very well might be, but I don't see how if they couldn't afford him a couple of years ago, they're going to be able to afford him now. And to me, that would be an addition. While the fit would be great for all the reasons Mike mentioned, I mean, this is a team that needs to pass rush badly. And so until you get that squared away, ponying up and paying potentially, you know, what, $8 to $12 million a year for Richard Sherman, I don't know how you can justify that expense until you know who's going to be getting after the quarterback on your defensive line. And putting all your eggs in the Daryl Taylor basket seems like a huge risk. And that's why, to me, that has to take precedence before figuring out if you're going to make another move at corner. I think they can get by with DJ Reed, who was tremendous last year. And you hope either Trey or Akello steps up to the plate and is able to take a step forward this year. And then I think Quentin Dunbar is another really low-budget move, you know, signing to a one-year deal, give him that next chance, that second opportunity, you know, at that contract year to potentially cash in 2022. I think you can go to battle with those four guys and be okay. To me, the need, the glaring hole at the pass rush spots is much more significant.
Well, let's talk about if they have a chance to fix those holes. Carlos Dunlap is still out there. Jadeveon Clowney, you want to bring him back on another one-year prove-it deal? He's out there. What about some names, guys, that the Hawks should be fishing for? Joe Fan, Michael Sean Dugar. One more segment with the fellas on Softy and Dick.
Hello in every state.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for March Madness and the Final Four. Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
All right, Softy Dick, hanging out till 7 o'clock. Michael Sean Dugar, The Athletic, Joe Fan, NBC Sports Northwest. In the last 15 minutes, the Hawks have acquired guard Gabe Jackson from the Raiders for a fifth-round pick. And, Mike, give us the latest update now on what the Hawks are dealing with draft pick-wise after the Gabe Jackson trade in the last 25 minutes, man.
For the first time, it feels like forever, you can count all of Seattle's draft picks on their hand. It feels like what they got three. I got a second rounder, a fourth rounder, and then a seventh rounder. Ooh, okay. Man, that's pretty bare.
Okay, yeah. I was under the impression they had five heading into today. I guess there was a comp pick from the Jets that hadn't shown up here. They hadn't grabbed one yet. So you're saying that the Hawks have three draft picks as of right now, a second, a fourth, and a seventh. Joe, is that what you're dealing with as well? Three picks, second, fourth, and seventh round?
Yeah, I thought it was a sixth, but it's either a sixth or a seventh. Regardless, they have very little draft capital, even less than they did when they woke up this morning. And now you're looking at the cap space.
Yeah.
I mean, Gabe Jackson has, I think, just 1 year left on his deal. I'm looking over the cap, and they had already terminated his contract with the report that he was going to be released. And so the details aren't there for what he's owed in 2021. But I believe he signed a five-year deal in 2017 that superseded the rookie deal. So it began in 2017, which would mean he only has 1 year left on his deal. So that goes to the point of, it's going to be around $10 million is what I'm guessing, which is going to cut, again, even more into their cap space with a lot left to do. So you got to look at some point, the Seahawks are going to have to create some more cap space, whether it's an extension or two or restructuring Russell Wilson. Regardless, it's a big move and fills a big void. And again, they're not committing to him long term. And so in the immediate future, you are appeasing Russ. You are showing a sense of urgency. And the cost is hefty, both in terms of what you're paying him and giving up a precious draft pick that you don't have many of this year. But it's hard to imagine once Tooney went off the board, you were going to be able to get a better guard. And now, you know, you have Gabe Jackson. I think that's the best Seahawks fans could have hoped for.
What's next then? Let's talk about wish list guys. Mike, obviously they're not going to be able to do a ton in the draft, so they're going to have to get it done through free agency. So what's your top couple on your wish list right now?
Man, it's pretty bare right now, to be honest. I still do think they need another some type of defensive back. They really need a pass rush. Like that's like Joe mentioned. It's again with like how good their defense has to be with when you're going to have like this run first offense. It has to be really elite. I mean, you have to get to the other team's quarterback a lot. And right now, I just do not have a lot of confidence in that. I think they should. It's too expensive to grab one guy right now, but you can grab two. Like, I don't know if Alden Smith has signed yet, but I like Alden Smith. If Everson Griffin's still out there, I would have liked Quentin Jefferson, but he's in Vegas now. I'm okay with bringing Clowney back, especially if you're just going to ask him to only rush the passer.
Yeah.
I like all of those names, you know, as guys to just bring in and say, hey, look, your job, bring back Benson Mayowa and say, your job is to rush the passer. Like, we'll have some other guys do the, you know, the five technique, you know, Leo run stop and stuff. Your job is to go kill the dude with the ball before he throws it. And that's all we need you to do. Like, they need a bunch of guys who can do that right now.
You mean dropping Clowney back in pass coverage on third down against the Packers in the biggest game of the year, on the biggest play of the year, is not the right call for a edge rusher. Joe, what do you think about Dunlap back? Obviously, he's not going to get the $14 million he was owed in his original contract for 2021, but could they get him back at a huge discount and maybe even add another player for that $14 million?
To me, the dream, and let's go pie in the sky, because why not? That's what we do in the offseason. It's food for thought. So I think if you're looking, center's still a very big need. So David Andrews from the Patriots is a name there. Austin Blythe, the guy who Shane Waldron knows, if Shane were to sign off on him, I think the Seahawks would feel good about it, and it'd be coming at a decent cost there. And then the other one, Austin Reeder from Kansas City, a guy who was a seventh-round pick and blossomed into a two-year start his last couple of years in Kansas City. And then if you can get one of those three at center and somehow find a way to bring back Dunlap, I think you're feeling really good. We talked about the level of optimism. That would shift the pendulum quite significantly in terms of, hey, you've addressed all of these voids before even worrying about what you don't have in terms of draft pick capital in this year's draft, and you're able to get creative with the salary cap to where it all works, and you might have some wiggle room to add another defensive back or a second pass rusher. But to me, those are the two. You need some sort of pass rusher of note, and you need a center. Those are the big ones, in my opinion, and everything else you can fill in from there, maybe a Josh Reynolds at wide receiver, and go on down the list.
There's a big disagreement, guys, on the importance of the running back position, but it does need to be filled. So tell us about, is it Carson? Is it someone other than Carson? And then it twofold, Penny's fifth-year option. I mean, they got to make a decision on whether they want to pay that guy $4.5 million this year. Mike, what do you think?
I think the running back position is important. Like, it's better to have a good running back than to have a bad running back. I just do not think you need to spend what it costs to maintain a top-tier running back when you can just use the rookie wage scale to your advantage and grab the next guy out of Ohio State. Right? I think, like, Christian McCaffrey's making, like, $16 million a year or something like that. And Mike Davis was, like, very serviceable as his replacement last year for, like, $2 million. Like, I think you can do that. So I would trot out – I would go get one of these guys on the market. I don't know, James White. I see if you can get, like, Leonard Fournette for, like, $3 million or something like that and pair those – Tevin Coleman, I think he's still unsigned. Mm-hmm. Oh, bring back Mike Davis. There it is. Bring back Mike Davis. Have him and Rashad Penny be your guys. You're spending a total of probably, like, $4.5 million on two running backs.
Yep.
That is the recipe. And spend big on the O-line. I don't like the idea of spending big on your running back and then figuring it out up front, which is kind of what the Packers are doing now. Like, I think that's a bad strategy.
One more for each of you. Dick, I'll handle Mike. You handle Joe. Right. Mike, you mentioned earlier that you would have voted pessimistic in the poll in general terms. Are you more optimistic or pessimistic about the Hawks' immediate future? You said you would have voted pessimistic. The signings of Everett and the acquisition of Gabe Jackson, would that have done anything to change your vote today?
No, I still think they need more up front. That's the other thing about having a good run game, too, or having a run-first offense. You still need an elite offensive line, right? You don't only need an elite offensive line if you're going to be a pass-first team. You need one if you're going to run it down the other team's throat as well. So until they add another guy up front, maybe two guys up front, I can't be really confident, especially when Arizona has drastically improved its roster. And I think L.A. really upgraded at the quarterback position. It has two teams in your division that got better than you, or at least as good as you, I think, this offseason.
Joe, it seems like KJ's falling through the cracks right now. I haven't heard a peep about any interest. Is he coming back?
I don't think so, unless his market is just completely depleted from what he expected it to be. I wrote last week that it would be organizational malpractice for them to bring back KJ Wright at market value. Now, don't construe that. I think he deserves to get paid. He was tremendous last year. And he shouldn't give the Seahawks any sort of hometown discount if he's able to get what he's hoping for from another club. But given the needs elsewhere, we've talked about all of them over the course of this hour, I don't see how you afford a KJ Wright when you have Jordan Brooks waiting in the wind. You invested a first-round pick in this kid. You've got to get him on the field as a three-down player immediately, pigeonholing him to a part-time role for a second straight season and paying KJ Wright upwards of, you know, $7 to $10 million, yep. To me would be an egregious misfire, because that means that's money not spent on the offensive line or defensive line. But would it be great to see KJ back? Absolutely. They are objectively a better team with him on the roster. But when money gets tight and you got to make tough decisions, I think that's an easy one that you can make and say, KJ, we wish you the best. Go get paid elsewhere.
Hard to imagine their defense, though, getting better when you allow a top 10 linebacker to walk away. So, I mean, this is the rub of the salary cap for sure, no doubt. Hey, guys, great stuff. Joe Fan, find him on Twitter, @Joe_Fan with two N's. Mike Dugar from The Athletic, @MikeDugar on Twitter. Mike, I promised you I'd make a donation based on your Twitter followers. You picked up 18 in the last hour, so next time I see you, I owe you $450.
I appreciate it, man.
It's coming. It's coming your way. Joe, Mike, great stuff.
Thanks,
fellas.
Guys.
Appreciate this, and we'll talk down the road,
appreciate
both
you.
Of you. Thank you very much, man. Awesome stuff from Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic, Joe Fain from NBC. We'll get a break. A lot more to get to on a busy Wednesday. Seahawks making moves. We'll recap them next on Softy and Dick.
Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on a beautiful Wednesday night right here on 950 KJR, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
So it's kind of a fun challenge now. We love it.
News for the Seahawks, twofold. Ian Rappaport reporting the Seahawks are signing Rams tight end Gerald Everett. And reports now coming down, the Seahawks are giving up a fifth-round draft pick for Raiders guard Gabe Jackson. Gerald Everett, according to reports, now members of the Seahawks.
Husky football team's gotten a transfer, and he can play right away. Cornerback Bookie Radley Hiles from the University of Oklahoma. He was the starting nickelback for the Sooners last couple years. And a sexual assault lawsuit has been filed against Houston quarterback Deshaun Watson after reports that a massage he was receiving, quote, went too far. Watson is publicly denying the claim.
Okay, well, let's hope that's the case for his sake. Patriots are tagging cornerback J.C. Jackson.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
With a second-round restricted free agent tender to hopefully keep him in the Patriots in New England.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
A.J. Green has signed a one-year deal with the Cardinals, so they got A.J. Green and J.J. Watt, so they must think it's like 8 years
now. And DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald. How old is Larry Fitzgerald now, by the way? Is he like 70?
41.
Is he 41? Is he really 41? There's no way he's 41. Is he 41 years
he's
old?
Close
41
to-
yards!
By the way, I will admit that I read that J.C. Jackson story just so I could play that drop.
Good. Jesus Christ, Jackson.
On the air. I don't give a damn if J.C. Jackson's getting a second round. Who cares?
That was Doc Rivers,
really?
Right?
Yeah, you put that in the update?
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Because of exactly that drop
you
right
Doc
there.
Sounds like he sounds like PJ Carlissimo.
Ah, a little bit.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Yeah, PJ Carlissimo raspy. Now or the 89 Seton Hall version
no,
of PJ Carlissimo. Okay, gotcha.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Well, if in case you're who's the idiot giggling in the background, by the way?
That's the actual guy. That's
what's
Jackson,
his, Jackson
whatever
who?
His name is.
Don't you guys all know each
the
other?
Reporter. The reporter for the 76ers.
Oh man. Well, good news for the Hawks, I think, today. You know, I wonder about our take on the poll we sent out, asking people if they're more pessimistic or optimistic
update on the poll.
About the Seahawks chances in 2021, about the immediate future. We asked Michael Sean Dugar, and those guys were great, by the way. You missed it, check out the podcast. 2,300 votes in, 74% say they're more pessimistic than optimistic. Would the Gabe Jackson, Gerald Everett acquisitions today change anybody's mind, you think, if you did vote pessimistic, which I know you didn't. So if you were in that camp, would it change your mind?
Just, I mean, the train is starting to roll now, and the two most pessimistic days for Seahawk fans over the course of a calendar year are the same every year. It's the day they lose in the playoffs, and it's the first day of free agency. I mean, those are the two most pessimistic days because, one, they're miserable because they lost, and the other day is they're miserable because they see all these teams overpaying for all these big-name free agents that John Schneider and Pete Carroll refuse to do.
You absolutely, and I'm not saying that you are wrong to feel this way at all, you absolutely sound more and more like Pete Carroll as the days go by. The train is starting to roll, baby. Here we go. Next, you'll tell me that Gerald Everett was a guy that you had your eye on in the 2017 draft and you wanted him real bad.
No, that I can't say. Okay? Can't say who
South
Gerald
Alabama.
Everett was in 2017. This is
a guy that we've been watching. We loved him in the draft in 2017. We've had our eye on him. We've always really admired him and everything he's done. That's what he's going to say at the press conference.
Oh, there's no question about that. There's no question about that. I just... You know, again, I've just spent so much time in my life just in misery over really bad sports teams, whether it's the Seahawks for like a 10-year run in the 90s or, you know, when the Sonics were, you know, unusually bad, or the Mariners have been bad for most of 40 years. I just really have a hard time finding it in me to really get pissed off at the greatest run that maybe any sports franchise in my life has had. I understand high expectations.
Well,
I totally get that.
You're satisfied.
I'm
not satisfied at all.
I want to win a Super Bowl. Yeah, I want to win a Super Bowl.
I don't think you do.
I don't like to lose in the playoffs.
But you know
what I do like? I do like the opportunity to lose in the playoffs every single year, which almost no team in the NFL gets that opportunity like the Seahawks.
I think you're absolutely happy going 12-4 and losing in the first round. What? I'm not kidding.
I'm happy going 12-4.
I think you are satisfied.
Every single year, I would happily sign for the regular season that the Seahawks had. I would not sign for a first-round exit every year.
I think there's
a
difference. There's a difference between being appreciative and being satisfied. I think all of us can be appreciative of what the Seahawks have done in comparison to what they had done, but I also think it's very fair for us to be unsatisfied with the way the last seven seasons have ended.
Hey, Dick, I'm going to simply ask you this question. In 2021, which Seahawks season, I'm going to give you, you can only have one here, which Seahawks season would you rather have? The team goes 10-6, they make a run on the road, and they lose in the NFC Championship.
Oh, yeah,
Or they go 13-3 and lose in the divisional round at home. Which would you rather have?
I think you throw the records out once the playoffs start, and it's about the but when you're looking back at a season, I mean, it's hard to say a 12-4 season was a bad season.
No, but either you went 13-3 or 10-6. But in the 10-6 year, you make a run and lose at a later point. Would you rather do that, or would you rather have more regular season success?
I'd rather go further in the playoffs.
Of course, definitely. Of course. Yeah, it's a conversation we had with the Huskies. Like, would you rather win the conference and lose in the second round, or finish fourth, be a 9 seed, and make the Elite Eight? I mean, obviously, just like Washington basketball, well, it had been this way up until the last couple of years, the standard is how far you make a run come tournament time. So, I mean, honestly, I think for the Seahawks, the standard has now become what do you do in the postseason, not what you do in the playoffs. I get the general sense, maybe I'm wrong, that the most fans don't care what their record is. They are measured by one thing and one thing only, and that's what happens come playoff time. Mike Garofalo, NFL Network, going to hear a bit from his conversation with Slick and Puck now.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.